Okay, the next case is Johnson versus American Towers. Mr. Parker. Let me state, as you approach too, Mr. Parker, I rode up with you and your colleague this morning without realizing you were connected with this case at all, and we didn't talk about the case.
We certainly didn't. It's a pleasure being here with you today for a hearing on what we consider as a very important case. It's not only important to the Johnsons, but I think it's important and becoming more relevant as cell phones are used for illegal purposes in prisons. It's a hot issue. I think everybody would agree that prisoners shouldn't be able to use cell phones to put a hit on somebody. So we understand that that is conduct that should be prohibited. And so we have to ask ourselves, how can we accomplish this? The Department of Corrections had petitioned the FCC for authority to jam the phones, and it has not been granted. And of course, that's not really relevant to what we're talking about here today. I don't think that there's, at this stage, the facts are that Captain Johnson was charged with the responsibility of confiscating cell phones in the Lee County, the Lee Correctional Institution. And that, in fact, did not suit certain people that had illegal cell phones in the prison. And as a result of that, an individual who was confined in the prison used a cell phone to call someone to put a hit on Captain Johnson. And in fact, on March 5th, 2010, as he was getting ready to go to work, his door was knocked down and he was shot six times by this individual who's now pled guilty. The question, of course, is the, we've sued the cell tower owners and also the occupiers of the people using it to transmit their signals off of this tower. Now, they say, the defendants say, we can't state a cause of action. I say we do. I think it's a very simple case on that. We stated a state law claim against the cell tower owners and occupiers for accommodating this illegal activity on their property when they knew it was, could occur and would occur and was occurring, and it did in fact occur on this occasion, and Mr. Johnson, Captain Johnson, was in fact very tragically injured. Now, I would look at this thing, I start thinking about, this is unusual because we didn't, in fact, a lot of these laws were passed when we didn't even have cell phones. But I started thinking about, well, what's a simple way to put this? What we're claiming that they did wrong. And I started thinking back before a few of us here were born back when this happened, and they had in the movies, you'd go to the movies, and I remember very vividly there was a ray gun that you could zap people with. I assume now it's probably a laser. So suppose that you had someone who had a tower that has a laser magnifier on it. And it was illegal to have ray guns in prison, but a guy got a hold of one, and he contacts the person on the tower with the magnifier and says, now I want to aim this at somebody and shoot them. And they do, in fact, do that.
Mr. Park, I've heard about the old days before. I'm glad to actually see somebody who lived through them.
I am. And I think you have one of your colleagues that was probably there at the movies with me.
Well, you're going to have to say that, not me. let me ask you this. If there is a federal duty not to interfere with signals from the cell phone, cell communications, if there is a state duty, how do you effectuate that state duty in light of the federal obligation? In other words, simplified, federal obligation is nobody interfere with signals from cell phones.
I don't think that is what Section 333 says.
You just don't think that duty exists, really?
Well, let's look at Section 333, which was enacted in 1934. Well, long time before cell phones. But what it says is that you cannot maliciously or intentionally, in other words, that is doing something by someone other than the cell phone operator, and back then the radio operator.
But I'm talking about the tower now. I'm talking about the tower.
Correct. The tower can interfere, obviously, with the signal because they're doing it. They're doing it right now with stolen phones. If you get a stolen phone, then the tower operators and occupiers, really the operators, I presume, they do intercept that signal and interrupt it. So it is being done. It's being done every day. So they can't say they can't do that because they're doing it. And they will admit they are doing it because it is reality. For instance, another example of them doing the same thing we're asking them to do, if your time is up on the phone, then they don't allow you to use the tower. And you can't communicate. So they are interfering in that instance. So they have the ability to do this. And really, I think this case, it really comes down
to... You mean they have the technical ability, but you say that doesn't violate the law to do that.
There's nothing that I can see that they've... I'll be honest with you, it is very hard for me to read their arguments and come up with a common sense interpretation of it. And they say it's preempting the federal law has taken over this area so that we cannot bring this case. But clearly, we brought a state law case.
What about the FCC refusing to give South Carolina prison officials or prison officials in South Carolina, I'm not sure which, the right to put those jamming devices? You mentioned that.
Sure.
The FCC denied the state the authority to do that.
They did not grant it, and the prison, of course, the prison would be somebody that would be interfering with. The operators and owners of the tower can't interfere with their own signals. So they can do it, and that is the importance of this case.
Again, when you say they can't interfere, you mean legally you cannot interfere with your own signals.
Correct. And I think that's very clear, and they are doing it. They just won't do it in this case, even though there's been a tremendous wave of opinion around the country that they ought to be doing.
I'm not sure I understood your answer to Judge Shedd just now.
All right, sir.
You say they can't interfere with their own signal. I'm sorry.
They can't, under Section 333, maliciously and intentionally interfere with their own signals, which they control.
Aren't they just shutting down the device, not the service itself?
Right. They're not shutting down by controlling that and stopping an illegal phone call. They are not interfering with anybody's legal service. And they can't interfere with people's legal service, but that doesn't cause them not to interfere with illegal services. Stop it, just like they would with a stolen phone. And that is what we're saying that they should have done in this case, and that there is no federal prohibition from them doing that. If you look at it, they say, well, our case is preempted and prohibited by 47 U.S.C. 201. 201 has absolutely nothing to do with this case. 201 says that the operators have to provide service upon a reasonable request. In other words, you can't discriminate and not provide service to customers. Now, what in the world does that have to do with this case? I cannot read it. Now, they only put in that brief Section B, but if you put A, which has to be read with it, it has nothing to do with this case. It's about denying a customer's reasonable request for service. And somehow our case is preempted by that. And I can't see it. I mean, I guess I'm simple, but I can't read it that way. And I've read it and read it. They say that 47 U.S.C. 332 preempts us. And the part they say preempts us says that you cannot, a state cannot, a locality cannot pass laws or do anything to affect the entry into the market or the rates. Now, how does this case have anything to do with entry into the market?
So, so let me see if I'm getting this. Your theory is that all the illegal cell phones should have been shut off. Is that it in a nutshell?
It could either they just don't get to transmit that signal beyond the nearest tower.
Right, that's what I mean. So
it's just
so the company should have identified the signals coming from the unauthorized devices and stopped the signal as soon as it got to the tower.
Really, not even that. They can stop all radio transmissions that come from a specific area, such as the prison.
So they should have shut down the prison.
No, cell phones are illegal in the prison, not only for everybody.
Hands.
No, for everybody.
Well, I'm not sure that's true.
Well, it is.
You're saying that's true as a matter of South Carolina law?
I'm saying that's true as far as South Carolina prison policy. That they do not allow
prison
cell
policy.
They
not
do
prison,
not. They
not
do
South
not,
Carolina law.
No, not that I'm aware of. But they do not allow cell phones even from the workers at the prison. No one can use a cell phone. They have the ability to keep cell phone signals. They can identify that area, and they can prevent them from putting and having illegal calls coming from that particular area. And that's what they've been asking to do. The prisons have
and
been
what about a person who drives past the prison?
He wouldn't be affected.
He wouldn't be affected?
No, only inside the prison.
And so your theory is that they have the power to, in effect, erect a dome over the prison.
If you want
and
to describe
you,
it
you
drive,
that, you, that I mean, yeah, I'm just trying to
yeah.
understand.
I mean, they can say that and draw a circle around that prison, and all signals that come from that area are not transmitted beyond the tower.
Does the other side argue they cannot technically do that?
No, we haven't heard that, no.
They don't say that. They just don't say as a matter of law they can't restrict.
Right. They're saying that it's restricted, and their arguments about how it's preempted, to me, absolutely none of them have any merit.
Let's assume you get by the preemption argument. Talk a little bit about the foreseeability.
Well, the foreseeability is clear because they were all notified in July of 2009 when the prison filed a petition that people were being hurt and they were using the cell phones out of the prisons to target people and to, in fact, do illegal activities. So they were well on notice that it was foreseeable that this was happening because it had been happening and the prison officials knew it had been happening and it was a major problem. And that's what Captain Johnson's job was to try to confiscate these illegal cell phones so that these illegal activities could not go forward out of the prison, and that was what he was, in fact, almost murdered for. And so, clearly, it was foreseeable. Now, I would like to point out to the court the Penny case, because that's the Fourth Circuit case that, to me, appears to be dead in point with what we're doing here. And in that case, there were cases brought that said that that because of the radiation emitted by cell phones, the cell phone, the people selling cell phones and the cell phone company should have, in fact, equipped them with a headset. And we probably know today that that probably was not accurate from the science standpoint, but they alleged that people were being injured by the low-frequency radio waves, and they brought a case for it that the Fourth Circuit dealt with every argument they have in this case and said, in fact, none of these sections that they say in the lower court said preempted this case. In there, they found that each one of these sections did not, in fact, preempt anything. Dealing with that case, which was a personal injury case based on strict liability, implied warranty, misrepresentation, and several other theories.
Under your reading of Section 333, I want to take you back to that. You know, the no person shall interfere with.
Correct.
How does the tower interfere with? How does the tower interfere with? They just supply the metal post.
Well, they provide the post, but they also, as the owner and occupier of the property, they have the right to control. I'm not saying they would in... We have alleged a cause of action against them, But and certainly they have a duty, and on that is section 364 of the restatement, which puts the duty on them as a landowner. It says a possessor of land is subject to liability of others outside of the land for physical harm caused by a structure or other artificial condition.
How would you effectuate that? If the tower owner, how could the tower owner do what you wanted the tower owner to do and not fall within no person shall interfere with radio communications?
Well, the tower owner, he has control of it because he can tell the operator that if you're going to allow these illegal calls to come in by which people are getting hurt, then I'm going to terminate my lease with you.
Well, doesn't that interfere with communications?
No, it interferes with an illegal call.
Yeah, but that call is a call. It's no, communication.
The operator interferes with the call. He said he takes the step to say, if you're going to be on my tower, you cannot allow these illegal calls that are hurting people to come through here. And we feel that is absolutely within their power to do that.
Now you have 5 minutes. Your time is run on your first presentation. You have 5 minutes. You want to reserve that, Mr.
I do. Thank
okay.
you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Anstrike? Am I saying your name right? Okay. Well, you know, we like to get it exactly right, so what do you want me to...
It's Angstreich, Your Honor.
Angstreich, okay.
So thank you, Your Honor. I'm Scott Angstreich. I represent the Verizon Wireless defendants, but I'm here presenting argument on behalf of all defendants. I'm splitting my time with Mr. Jeremy Hodges, who represents Farmers Telephone. But we both can answer any questions you might have. Your Honors, it was a heinous crime, the shooting of Mr. Johnson, and his survival a bona fide miracle. But the people responsible for that crime are the people who shot him and conspired to do so, not, as Judge Curry held, people who operate wireless telephone networks or people who own structures to which antennas are attached. The case was properly removed, and the claim was properly dismissed.
One problem you have is, aside from the legal issues to be decided, it just doesn't seem to make common sense that cell phone operators, companies, support prisoners having cell phones to then set up and do dastardly deeds. It's just commonsensical, and it may be legal that you can do it, but it just isn't commonsensical, do you think?
Your Honor, the question isn't whether it's commonsensical.
Well, just let me say this.
We are opposed to it, Your Honor.
That was a question I asked you. You said it's not the question. That was my question.
Your Honor, it's a question of federal law. The FCC.
I know that.
Promulgating rules and the cell phone industry.
I said, I'm just asking. You have to stop talking. Let me tell you how this goes. When I start talking, you have to stop. That's how we're going to proceed. You know that. I know you're just that, you know, passionate about your advocacy. But I'm just saying, do you agree with me that this looks like it runs afoul of common sense, not any legal issue, but just common sense, that we all shouldn't be taking whatever steps necessary to prevent communications coming from convicts to do what they want to, or help them do what they want to outside the prison walls?
Absolutely, Your Honor.
Okay.
But as I'm saying, it's the FCC, which has a pending rulemaking to figure out the way to do this consistent with Congress's allocation of responsibility over wireless services, which is exclusively federal and doesn't give room for the states to come up with their own ways of doing it. Now, specifically on the removal question, we have Farmers Telephone, which, as you, Your Honor, noted, owns a structure. Farmers Telephone does not operate a wireless network. The antennas that my clients and the other wireless carriers attach to those emit radio waves. The only way for Farmers to stop, or any tower owner, to stop those radio waves from going where radio waves want to go within their geographical limits would be to emit their own radio waves that counteract and block those.
Who decides where the tower goes physically?
States have zoning authority under Section 332C7.
I mean, if it's permitted, though, who decides where within that properly zoned area does the tower go?
Well, as I understand it, the tower owner picks a place they want to put up a tower, acquires either the property or the rights to property.
Let me ask you this. Why couldn't the tower owner look to put the tower in a spot where the signal wouldn't be strong enough to get to the prison?
Well, Your Honor, the way cell phone networks work, these cells are hexagonal in shape. The tower sits in the middle of them.
Isn't it line of sight, though? Isn't it line of sight reception from the... No, it's not?
It's not, Your Honor.
This is why we get
cell phone signals inside buildings.
Yeah, no, that's not what line of sight means. That means from the point to where the phone is, you could draw a line. Not that you look through walls.
No,
that was the ray gun. That's Superman with X-ray vision.
There is wireless technology, Your Honor, that literally needs a clear, unobstructed path by any kind of structure.
But every kind of wireless communications has some limit, doesn't it?
It does. But, Your Honor, this prison...
So I'm asking, why couldn't you... I'm just asking. Can you control how far the signal goes and where it reaches? Isn't that a function and part of the location of the tower?
It's in part a function of the location of the tower, but it's also part of a function of the location of the prison. This prison sits next to an interstate highway
right. That
non-prisoners drive on. It sits in between two other state highways non-prisoners drive on. It's a mile and a half from a high school and a junior high school where students are allowed to use cell phones.
But see, my question is, couldn't you control it?
No. Can't.
I know you don't want to run afoul of the FCC's anti-jamming provision, but short of that, what could you have done to prevent this?
Short of that, Your Honor, the way, and you see this in the FCC's rulemaking, the way this is done is by the prison. There are systems where, there are companies out there that sell these systems. They install antennas in the prison. They get subleases from the wireless carriers, which allow them to use the same radio spectrum the wireless carrier does. Those antennas are strong enough to capture any cell phone calls coming into or out of the prison, and then they check them against a whitelist that the prison provides.
One of the Baltimore prisons just installed that system recently.
And the FCC is working to make it even easier for prisons to do that. But these
why is that not interfering with radio communications?
Because, Your Honor, interference, and I'd point you to paragraph 18 of the notice of proposed rulemaking, interference is when you use radio signals to disrupt the actual transmission of the radio waves through the air. The radio waves in these managed access systems travel through the air unimpeded. It's the intelligence in the system that says, just like, again, if you don't pay your bill, the wireless company isn't going to complete your call. Your phone, the radio waves between your phone and the tower work perfectly fine. Nothing interferes with that at all. But the network, the physical wired network, refuses to transmit your texts or your phone calls or your internet traffic beyond a certain point, so it doesn't go through. If we were to erect a dome around the prison that prevented the signals coming out of the cell phones from getting anywhere.
But I don't understand. Doesn't it have to interfere with the radio signal from a cell phone? If the cell phone is not going to be, call is not going to be completed, absent interference with the radio signal, how can it other than be completed?
Well, Your Honor, once the phone talks to the tower, they transmit radio signals back and forth.
Right.
The tower then has a fiber optic cable nowadays coming out of it that goes back to a switching center where all the intelligence in the network lives. And at that
point... So you can interfere with it in the fiber optic cable?
You're not interfering with the signals at that point.
Well, you're interfering with the call.
Yeah, absolutely. And 333...
That's what I'm saying.
But that's not what 333 talks about.
I know, but you have a tendency to answer what you want to ask and not what you want to answer, not what I'm asking you.
Sorry, I'm trying to answer what
I'm trying to understand
question.
Your argument. The point is, you say you can't interfere with the cell phone call, basically as long as that call signal is underground and not in the air.
Yes.
Okay.
Because 333 talks about interfering with radio waves and through, as the FCC has interpreted, the deployment of jamming devices that emit their own radio waves. And those are per se illegal in the United States. You're not allowed to sell them, market them, buy them, use them.
Right.
But cell phone companies are allowed to manage their networks.
I want to take you back to a question on some other point and let you come back. I didn't finish the question before you said no. But are you telling me that it's physically impossible by location of towers to prevent service from being provided to a location? You're not saying that, are you?
I'm not saying that, no.
You said that to me because you answered the question too quickly about the state highways and stuff. The point is you don't want to limit the service and you don't think you need to limit the service?
you could create dead zones, right?
Right.
Wireless
okay.
licenses cover broad geographic
I didn't,
areas.
Let me, the reason I asked that, I didn't know maybe under a license, you're obligated to fill a certain area.
You
I don't
are
know.
Obligated to fill a certain portion of the area,
oh, okay.
yes. I suppose, depending, I mean, there's 25 prisons that South Carolina runs. I don't know how much. But the problem, Your Honor, is you can't create a dead zone that hews to the specific dimensions of the prison. You'd have to create a dead zone that, in this case, would encompass lots of permissible places where people completely unrelated.
But that wouldn't be. But that wouldn't be any violation of the law to create that dead zone. That would just be a customer relations issue.
Well, if it was a mandated by state law, it would be, and that's 332C3A, which says that states do not have the power to impose obligations and duties on the conditions of entry. And this is just like the Bastien case. Bastien argued that AT&T, before providing service or in order to provide service, had to have more antennas.
So your answer is the cell towers and cell companies could do it technically if they wanted to, but they wouldn't have to do it if the state told them to. That's what you said.
You can create dead zones that encompass prisons and lots of other areas around the prisons. And maybe the FCC will decide to limit wireless licenses in that way. It has not, and states are prohibited
why
by Congress
it,
from doing
that,
it.
If you can do it, why wouldn't that at least create at least a glimmer of a state duty to do that?
Because, Your Honor, a state duty to do it would be expressly preempted by Section 332C3A.
So you just it's just preemption.
It's preemption. And there's no case that's ever been – I mean, there's no South Carolina case that's recognized a duty to alter the manner in which, I mean, if I own a coffee shop that I know suspicious people, or even better, in the tower, right?
I wouldn't wave that red flag. Mr. Parker's sitting over there. He may go get you a case soon on that point.
I don't own a coffee shop, thank
yeah.
you.
But if I mean, to your legal point.
My legal was if I owned a strip mall and there was a coffee shop, I leased space to a coffee shop, and criminals happened to congregate in that coffee shop, the notion that the owner of the strip mall would be liable because its lessee didn't take actions to break up the conversations, because those conversations ultimately led down the road to some kind of criminal activity. Mr. Parker cites no South Carolina case or from any jurisdiction that identifies such a duty.
You draw a distinction between the tower owner and the cell phone companies.
For purposes of fraudulent joinder, I think yes, there's a distinction.
And that is because why?
Because as Judge Curry recognized for the question of is there a state law duty, the tower owners are even one step further removed. The tower owners don't operate wireless networks. They just own inner structures. Yes, they allow people, but you know, building owners allow wireless.
Is the location of the tower, moving the location of the tower to create a dead zone, in your opinion, would that be interfering with the radio waves?
No, it would cover. There are other provisions of law that would create those problems. So when Congress preserved state authority over zoning, and I know we didn't brief this because this notion
right.
didn't come up, it's 332C7.
I've had those cases before.
I know the court has had a number of them. You're not allowed, states are not allowed to prohibit wireless service in an area. And I would think if the state were to use its zoning authority to create dead zones.
Well, they can prohibit location of towers, though.
Right, but if they were to prohibit location of towers for the purpose of creating a dead zone where no service existed, I think that would fall within the bar on prohibiting service.
Well, let's assume Mr. Parker can get us by the preemption argument. Talk about, he seemed pretty confident about the foreseeability issue.
Your Honor, there is no South Carolina case that applies the foreseeability notion in a case like this. We cited out-of-state cases where people tried to hold cell phone companies, not tower owners, but cell phone companies liable for texting while driving and injuries caused in texting while driving. And those cases uniformly reject the notion that foreseeability reaches that far.
But the South Carolina Supreme Court often relies on the restatement of tort.
Well, it hasn't relied on this one, and this provision in particular doesn't apply here. Restatement Section 364 says, if I build a structure and it falls over and hits somebody, then I'm liable. All of the examples in Restatement 364 are about my structure. I slant my roof and snow falls on your property and it injures you. I'm liable. None of them are about I've leased property to somebody who establishes a service that's used large distances from my property, and nothing having to do with my physical structure itself causes the injury, right? The towers are not causing the injury. They're not alleged to cause the injury. The towers are simply inert structures. If the tower fell on Mr. Johnson, you talk to Mr. Hodges about it, but I suspect they'd be liable under South Carolina law. But that's not what happened here. It's not what is alleged to happen here. And given Mr. Parker's discussion, this is focused on specifically what's alleged. The defendants had the ability to prevent cell phone signals from being emitted to and from the confines of the prison. Mr. Parker doesn't want that complaint to be about jamming, but the only way you can prohibit or you can prevent cell phone signals from being emitted, right, they come out of the handsets, out of the prison or into, is to establish other radio waves that block or jam those.
You don't have the technology to change the range of waves coming from your broadcast site? Is that not possible?
You can raise and lower the power on these. Right. The problem, Your Honor, is that at night, signals travel further than they do in the day. Weather changes the...
Well, I'm not asking about weather or that or power. I'm just asking, is there not the technology that you can limit your broadcast, limit where your waves, the strength of your waves or the frequency on which it operates? Is that not possible? It may not net the desired effect, but is that not technically possible?
As I said, it's possible for wireless carriers to decide to craft what would be dead zones in their weather via antenna placement or antenna power. The problem with that is I think for this purpose of this case, at least twofold, perhaps I'll come up with a third as I'm talking. One, that's not something the tower owners can do. And as Judge Curry correctly held, if the tower owners were to actually emit their own radio waves that blocked ours...
What about condition the lease?
If they would condition the lease, as Judge Curry held, citing the Clarkstown case from the Second Circuit, imposing such requirements based on state statute, regulation, or verdict of a jury applying common law would be subject to implied preemption, right, because of Congress's overall federal control over the technical and operational aspects of wireless networks. So that wouldn't help them either. So the tower owners can't do it. As far as the wireless carriers go, though, any state obligation to create those dead zones would constitute a barrier to entry. And the final problem, of course, is that these dead zones can't hew to the confines of a prison. What you're talking about is creating dead zones.
Under Section 333,
yes.
Do you read no person shall interfere? Is that no person include the actual cell company itself?
Absolutely. Because they can willfully interfere by operating their own jam. I don't know why they do it. But the other problem with interfering is, of course, the jamming device itself is illegal. Wireless carriers can't buy them any more than you or I can buy them.
But wait. But if they could limit their signal some other way other than jamming, they could do it?
That's not interfering. Interference is the emission of a conflicting signal so that the two signals butt into each other.
So then your position is that they had some technology by which they could limit other than jamming, then they wouldn't violate the statute to do it.
Not that provision. But a state law duty that would require the creation of dead zones within a federally licensed service territory would run out of Section 332C3A. This is the flip side of the Bastien case. Bastien wants more antennas. Mr. Parker wants fewer antennas. Those decisions are federal in nature, and they're not for the states. We ask for the judgment to be affirmed.
Okay. Did Mr. Johnson get workers' compensation benefits? You don't know.
I have heard that he did, but I don't know for a fact one way or the other.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Hodges.
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Jeremy Hodges, and I represent Farmers Telephone Cooperative. I'm here today on behalf of farmers and the tower owner defendants. I don't have any points to make that Mr. Angstreich hasn't already covered. So I won't belabor them or repeat them, but I will be gladly answer any questions that you have that relate to the tower owners.
Why can't you move the tower in a way that the signal won't reach the prison?
You could, but
why didn't you?
The problem is it would not reach other areas outside of the prison where it's lawful to use a cell phone.
Yeah, but do you have an obligation that you have to put a tower up? Do you have an obligation to give maximum service?
No, the tower was placed in this area to serve I-20 because it's close to the interstate.
But I understand, but you, the owners of the tower, you could have decided at a public spiritness or whatever, we don't care what you say, cell company, we're going to put our tower in a position. It might cause a little problem with people from out of state riding down Interstate 20, but we are not going to put our tower up. We're public interest folks, and we're not going to put our tower in a position to broadcast a signal that can be used by prisoners. You could do that, couldn't you?
You could, but you would also sort of create dead zones in areas outside the prison.
Okay.
And in a rural area such as Lee County that we're talking about, maybe that's not a big deal. But what about the prison that's located in downtown Columbia?
You wouldn't want to be in a dead zone if you had a car wreck on I-20 doing 75 miles per hour and needed to call the state police.
That's correct. Or maybe your child's a student at the elementary school nearby and there's a security situation there. You wouldn't want the parent not to be able to use their cell phone to know that there's an emergency lockdown and a problem at the school. You wouldn't want to deny lawful, useful, beneficial service to people who happen to be located in the vicinity of a prison.
I didn't suggest that you would. I just suggest that you could. And in the balance, you struck a balance, I take it you would say, between providing service to folks who might need it and those who don't need it, and how do you make those two ends meet?
I agree with that it could be done. But that would be the only way that a tower owner could accomplish that, would be the location issue. Because the towers themselves are inert, as Mr. Angstreet said. They don't emit or receive any signals. They're just simply tall structures that provide the height that the service providers are looking for in order to create a wireless network.
Most of these cell phones get into prisons through correctional officers.
I would suspect that's the case. I think there was a news article that may have made it into the record that recounted an event where they were thrown over the wall and retrieved by prisoners in the yard. So I imagine that they get in.
I can believe that because I've often wanted to throw cell phones over the wall. But we've actually had cases recently where people, visitors, sneak them in body cavities. But I think probably the record indicate that most do get in through correctional officers.
I wouldn't dispute that, Your Honor. And I wouldn't dispute that if I was a prisoner, I wouldn't think the cell phone was a valuable tool to have to try and stay in touch with my family. But they're infamous.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Mr. Parker?
Thank you. I'll talk about a couple of things that brought up. And insofar as the preemption in this case, there's a presumption, as United States Supreme Court has said, there's a presumption against preemption, and preemption should be clear. And I will promise you that any of their arguments about this being preempted or anything but clear that Congress intended to take away this area from the states of protecting people from illegal activity, which is what they want to say. And my understanding is that it's not any of the, there's nothing in evidence and before the court that says they can't technically do this, and I believe they can, and they do it through a system called managed access system that they can install that allows them to manage these calls coming out of the prison and confine calls from the area of the prison. That's my understanding. But we're not there in this case because at the moment what we have before the court is our complaint, which states a state law duty that they violated and that Captain Johnson has a right to recover under it. And I misstated something I want to correct, and that is that there is a regulation that Ms. Barnes called to my attention when I sat down that prohibits makes contraband the cell phones for inmates and prison staff, and there's a South Carolina regulation on that. But they do have the technical ability to do this, and I can't understand the argument that somehow not allowing calls from the prison, which are illegal, somehow interferes with the cell phones companies' entry into the market. The market for illegal telephone calls? I mean, to me, that's ludicrous. That there's a market, that they're saying the market we're interfering with is the market for illegal cell phone calls coming out of that prison. Now, how could that be right?
I just can't interpret that section in that way. And the Penny case
is it a federal statute?
It is a federal statute.
Possible.
If Congress intended to make a market of illegal cell phone calls, then things have gone beyond where I think they are.
You never know what we do.
But in any
market of users of interstate highways and schools and.
It is my understanding they do not have to interfere with that. It's not in the record one way or the other. I think some of the information in the record deals with the managed access, and that they do have this capability of doing it, and they've been asked over and over to do it because of this, not only there's been several incidents like Captain Johnson, but it's well known that in the prison environment that prisoners are conducting, absolutely conducting illegal, harmful, terrible deeds that originate inside prisons over cell phones. It's a serious problem. But what we have before the court is Mr. Johnson's case, where we state a state law cause of action. We don't rely on any federal cause of action or any federal violation of any federal statutes. It's simply a negligence cause of action, which we establish the elements of, and we plead the elements of, and that's what's before the court. And
was he awarded workers' compensation?
He was. And, of course, he's had a very career-ending injury and huge, huge medical expenses as a result of what has occurred to him, and it ended his career. And Captain Johnson, thankfully, has really become a going around the country speaking on the need to stop the cell phone use in prisons, because that has become his cause, and I think a very worthy one. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will let the clerk adjourn court, and then we'll step down to greet the lawyers.
This honorable court stands adjourned until tomorrow morning at 8:30. God save the United States and this honorable court.